The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views of the show's host and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the management, owners, or staff of this radio station. And now, it came from the radio.
Yabatoi, and welcome once again to It Came From The Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. I am here by myself for the Snowden edition in the MFC Studios with this week's show. On this week's show, we're going to have L-Man Jenny Felty interviewing author Scott Krainic, and also L-Man Jenny Felty interviews filmmaker Antonio Munoz de Mesa. Before we do any of that, let's take it away with the news. The news is brought to you in part by the fine folks at sci-fi.radio. That is sci-fi for your Wi-Fi. As well as the fine folks at the Big Apple Con, which we are the official radio show of, celebrating over 26, 7, 8, 9 years of comicness and pop culture stuff. For more information, go to www.bigapplecc.com. The next convention is scheduled all the way in November of this year on the 21st. Tickets are not on sale right now. Also want to give out shout-outs for our Patreons, of which there are Danny Grillo, award-winning director Jared Burrell, Newsday famous Driller Media, Shatter Rabbit Art, Yasmin Array, The Hurricane, and Millie Bortez. If you want to have your own little shout-out, go to our website, www.itcamefromradio.com. This little button on there takes you right to our Patreon page. And just for $1, you can get your own little shout out. And then we have different tiers, so you can get other perks leading all the way up to our grand perk, which is getting a day with co-host L-Man Jenny Felty, consisting of two prepared and cooked meals, along with the recipes, by and from her Keys to Live the Life guidebook, a personal trainer workout session for you and a friend at her personal gym, in addition to all other perks. Also, on the It Came From The Radio website is my book, Designated, a book about two warring alien races fighting over a newly discovered power source. The war finds its way to planet Earth, and as a result, some humans gain abilities. Issue 1 is on sale right now. And issue 2 is coming out this year. Also, I want to mention that on Wednesday, March 11th, at the East Metal Horror Library, we're going to have author Dr. Demel Elliott Hubbard. She will be raffling off a copy of her book, and we will also be raffling off two passes to the Long Island Trading Card Game Show, the two-day event at the Nassau Coliseum. For more information, go to www.eastmetal.info. Alright, so as we always like to do, we start off with the sad news. Actor Eric William Dane died recently from ALS, which is a nerve-destroying disease. While Eric was in such films and TV shows as X-Men The Last Stand, Open Water 2, Adrift, Marley and Me, Bad Boys, Ride or Die, Gideon's Crossing, The Original Charm, The Last Ship, and Euphoria, just name a few, he was perhaps best known for his portrayal of Dr. Mark Sloan in 139 episodes of Grey's Anatomy from 2006 to 2012, a role which he reprised in 2021. And for me, personally, for the 13 episodes of the series Countdown, which he played Special Agent Nathan Blythe, who was the guy in charge of the task force. I just saw that probably a few months back. It was a brand new show. The show took a break between it was one season, but it took a break between the season. And what was weird is that if you were paying attention, Eric's character stopped using his arm. I think it was his right arm. It was just, if you watch it now, you can clearly see how he was losing the ability to use his arm over the course of the show. And towards the end, like, they tried their best to hide it, but you can tell that there was something off. I noticed that there was something off, but I couldn't tell what it was. Did a little homework on it, and I found out that he had a disease, and now he's gone. It was a great show, and it's, I'm sorry that he'll be missed. He was 53 years old. So moving on for the next bit of sad news, actor David James Actor James David Vanderbeek also died recently from cancer. While James was in a slew of movies and TV shows, James is perhaps best known for his role of Dawson Leary on 122 episodes of the series Dawson Creek, which ran on the WB network from 1998 to 2003. He was 48. James is just one of those guys that's just been around. I never actually watched Dawson's Creek, but I was aware of him. He was extremely popular. I hear he's a very nice guy. I see him popping up all over in TV shows and movies and just him being James Vanderbeek. And it's crazy that he's younger than me. So he was just 48 years old. So moving on for some more sad news. Actor Thomas Patrick Noonan also died recently. As of this recording, no cause of death has been announced. While Thomas was in a handful of movies and TV shows, he is perhaps best known for his roles of Frankenstein's monster in a 1987 film, The Monster Squad. He was Kane, which was the bad guy, in RoboCop Part 2. He played Reverend Nathaniel Cole in 17 episodes of the series Hell on Wheels, and The Pallid Man in 18 episodes of the 12 Monkey series, which ran from 2015 to 2018. He was 74. I don't think I've actually seen The Monster Squad. I know I saw RoboCop, so I remember him from that, but I can't think of anything else I remember seeing him in. So moving on, for the last bit of sad news, actor and filmmaker Robert Selden Duvall, known professionally as just Robert Duvall, also died recently. Also, no cause of death has been announced. Robert was in such films as To Kill a Mockingbird, True Grit, MASH, the movie, THX 1138, The Godfather and a sequel, The Godfather Part 2, Apocalypse Now, True Confessions, Natural Colors, which I loved that movie, Newsies, Falling Down, Geronimo, and American Legend, The Paper, Sling Blade, Deep Impact, Gone in 60 Seconds, The Sixth Day, Stalin, and Wild Horses, which he also wrote and directed, just to name a few. He was 95. Robert, once again, was just one of those guys that was just always around. I really didn't see much of his work. I saw one or two of the movies I mentioned, and of course a few others, but he was just always there, and he was always around, and he was just like the tough guy, you know? It was kind of weird, but he was 95. So that is it for the sad news. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more. It came from the radio.
Hi, so you've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at mfc_studios@hotmail.com.
Cosplayers, exhibitors, and celebrities, oh my! Stand by, Connecticut. Dragon's Realm Comic Con is coming March 21st, 22nd at the Danbury Sports Dome, located at 25 Shelter Rock Lane. It will be Danbury's only premier comic convention. This event is your one-stop shop for everything pop culture, featuring celebrity meet and greets, exhibitors selling the coolest products, various discussion panels, a gaming area, and of course, cosplay contests. Tickets will be sold at the door or get them online via ticketspice.com. Link for tickets are on our Facebook and Instagram pages. Visit drcomiccon.com for more.
Hi guys, this is Xenia Seberg, who plays Zev on the show Lex, and you're listening to It Came From the Radio.
BKG Productions, LLC, your ultimate audio transformation partner. Got audio that needs a magic touch? I am here to elevate your content. Specializing in professional audio editing, I can clean up background noise, plosives, and pesky S sounds. From podcasts to songs, I've got you covered. Whether it's an interview, music track, setting volumes to precise specs, email bkgvobiz@gmail.com or go to fiverr.com, search for BK Graves 1, and trust me to make your sound sparkle.
Meet Grimlock having fun on It Came From the Radio.
Me, Greg Berger, also.
My neural net processor is linked to sci-fi.radio, the sci-fi for my Wi-Fi. The more I listen, the more I learn.
Hi, folks. Andy Robinson here. And like all the good things in life, it came from the radio. Thank you.
Step into the fantastic world of cool kids comics and toys at 2055 Hempstead Turnpike, East Meadow, New York. Discover Comic-Con exclusives, the latest Funko Pops, and a treasure trove of new and vintage toys and comics. Whether you're a collector or a first-time visitor, we got something to spark your imagination over here. Visit Cool Kids Comics and Toys today. Let your adventure begin, huh?
Hi, I'm Alina Watko. I play Hyrel on Star Trek Discovery, and you're listening to It Came From the Radio.
Comic Books for Kids is the largest charity in the U.S. for comic books, toys, and pop culture items to children in hospitals and cancer centers. Donations of toys, books, action figures, Funko Pops, or anything pop culture related can be made to this organization. Find them at cb4k.org.
Hi, this is Amy Jo Johnson, writer-director from the film The Space Between, and you're listening to It Came From the Radio.
This is Carrie Steller from In the Girls' Corner, and you're listening to It Came From the Radio.
Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to It Came From the Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. Now we're going to go with, as I mentioned, I'm by myself in the MSC Studios for the Super Cold Blizzard Edition. So moving on for the not as sad news from the...
That's a lot of nuts!
...department. The film Wuthering Heights has taken the number one spot in a domestic box office, pulling in $32.8 million in ticket sales in its first week of release, beating out the new animated film Goat, which came in at number two spot, making $27.2 million, also in its first week of release. For those of you keeping track, Avatar is still the highest grossing film of this year, with $397.2 million, followed by Zootopia Part 2, with $421 million. Now, as I've been mentioning, because both of these movies came out last year, the numbers are slightly askew, as this year Avatar has made $146.8 million, and Zootopia raked in $83.1 million. The first film that came out this year, 2026, and is at the highest grossing film of this year that has come out this year, is at number three with $69.4 million, and that movie is The Housemaid. I still have yet to see Avatar. I saw Zootopia Part 2. It was entertaining. I would say that it wasn't as good as the first one, but, you know, what do you gotta do? The chemistry of the two leads is there, and I think maybe it was a slightly bloated, but it was still a pretty fun movie to watch. I saw The Housemaid, and I think I mentioned it before, but I liked the movie. I enjoyed it. I haven't seen that much as of yet, so I would guess as of right now, it's probably one of the best things I've seen this year, but it's probably not going to hold up. It wasn't like, oh my God, it was amazing. It just had a really good twist to it. And I like the fact that, as I mentioned before, it feels like the movie Barbarian, where you think you're going to go watch one movie, and then you wind up seeing a completely different movie. And maybe, if I have time, I'll watch it for a second time, but I'm very backlogged with all the stuff that I need to see. But if I do go back and watch it again, I will be able to see it through a different eye because of the twist. It's actually funny. It reminds me of the film The Orphan, just off the top of my head, that was marketed as, this movie has a big surprise twist. Super surprise twist, big twist, gonna be a big twist. So going into the movie, I was looking for a twist, and I actually predicted a twist. That was pretty close. But in this situation, I had no idea what I was getting into. I just knew that it was a popular movie. It had the two female leads, of both which I like Amanda Seyfried, and I hadn't really seen too much of Sydney Sweeney before. I saw her in Madam Web, but that's a whole other story. But I figured I would give it a chance. I wasn't a fan of Paul Feig because I didn't think the female Ghostbusters was that good. But I gave it a chance. I figured I would watch it, and I was pleasantly surprised. So I'm wondering if I had known what the twist was, would I have been able to predict it, or if I would have watched it at all. But anyway, that is it for the news. So with that, we're going to take another break, and we'll be back with more It Came From the Radio.
Hey everybody, this is Todd McFarlane of the record-setting Spawn comic series. And if you're looking for any kind of cool conversation about creators, about entertainment, about all that good stuff, you go to It Came From the Radio. You're listening to the right spot.
Now, back to our show.
You are listening to It Came From the Radio. I am with Scott Kranek. Now, I interviewed Scott I want to say it feels like 2 years ago, but I didn't look. So maybe it was 1 year ago. Maybe it just feels like so long because I missed him. I don't know. But we talked about his last book. Well, last time we talked about his book, Amen, which was designed in the fashion of Mad Magazine. It supposedly made my stepbrother cry. So one of the villains is in it is called Donald Dumpster. So whether you love or hate Trump, that's pretty witty. It's pretty witty. So welcome back, Scott. And now you're producing a satirical book about bowling. So welcome back.
Right. Thank you. It's good to be back. Yeah, it's a fictional history of women's bowling. Or is it fictional? But it's going to be basically how bowling completely changed the entire world that we live in and mm-hmm. has shaped the world that we're in right now.
Right. Well, sorry for that crazy intro. It has been a wild day already. It's not. It's like 1:20 p.m. Oh, my God. I feel like I've been put in a blender. So this bowling thing. Now, why bowling? Why not pickleball? Why not tennis? Why not shuffleboard? Why not checkers?
Bowling because I grew up bowling. I'm from mm-hmm. Cleveland, as you know, and bowling is huge. It's huge in New York, too. But I grew up bowling on a league and. You know, it's just kind of cheesy. It's just kind of a vintage sport. It's kind of cheesy in a way, like the movies Big Lebowski and Kingpin. Like, it's, I don't know, there's something about bowling that, I don't know, I felt it would be a good subject and a good vehicle to, you know, talk about just silly world history, but also bring in current events, current issues, mm-hmm. you know, how bowling has helped change that. But, I mean, it really hasn't, mm-hmm. but. You can bring in these issues and use bowling as a vehicle, but I don't know. It's just going to be different.
Yeah. Well, from what I've seen, I thought it was really fun. And I'll be contributing a piece about the health ramifications and side effects, but really the benefits, the health benefits that bowling can bring you. And maybe it'll be partially true, which it will. And maybe it'll be part satire. We'll find out. We'll see. I'm going to write it soon. I guess I got to April, right?
April 1st. Well, also, don't forget, you have another homework assignment about how bowling helped women gain freedom in the Middle East.
Right.
Because your friend shot mm-hmm. for this book. And so that's where, you know, the fictional history of women's bowling. Bowling didn't give women freedom in the Middle East. Bowling didn't help the civil rights movement. Bowling didn't help the LGBTQ community, but
maybe it did.
In this book, maybe it did.
Maybe it did. Oh, I have an LGBTQ friend. I'm not going to mention who it is. And I'd say bowling really did help them a lot. And I bet you I could even get a quote from him to say how bowling has helped his life. I actually can guarantee it.
You know what? Well, maybe this could go in your essay as a doctor.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. And
how talked about this before.
Yeah, no, well, you know, I'm full of it, for better or for worse. But and then we have Maheen Lemon, who did the photo mm-hmm. shoot. So basically, you know, giving women in Pakistan, basically giving them freedom, you know, the feminization or helping them be mm-hmm. feminists. Mm-hmm. I bet she has some real life quotes about how it's empowered her, for real. So even though it's a satire book, there's a lot of truth to it.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting mix. And like the other book, like Amen, it's going to be mm-hmm. Mad Magazine inspired because I grew up reading Mad. So a lot of different comic artists, a lot of well-known comic artists mm-hmm. who I'm surprised or wanted to be involved. Like people love this idea because I think it's so different and weird.
Yeah. I mean, I like it. It's fun. So speaking of what's going to be in it, what's going in this? Who's contributing to it? What type of art forms?
A lot of comic art, like Gary Dumb, who did American Splendor and is another fellow Clevelander. Mm-hmm. He's doing a story. Gideon Kendall, who is an actual artist for Mad and done a bunch mm-hmm. of books, he's doing a story. Bob Hall, who is the co-creator of West Coast Avengers, he's doing a story. Dennis Kitchen is doing a page or two. My Photography, like weird kind of fake bowling ads with naked women, like how in the history of women's bowling, you know, men started trying to sexualize it. And so I took photos and put them in with these old ads. So they look like very kind of not demeaning, but it's trying to sexualize the sport. So there's going to be a section on that. Essays like some Keith Lockhart, who did some horror films. He's writing a short story, poetry, a play about bowling, like all this fictional stuff. But it's like how bowling just was so influential. Like, yeah, there's going to be a lot in it. I hope I don't screw it up, and I hope I arrange it well and it flows good.
I think you're going to do a good job. I have faith in you. I think it's going to be great. Because sometimes I contribute to things that I know are going to be horrible, because to me that's entertaining. It's great. And then I contribute to things or impart things that I know are going to be wonderful. So to me, I'm happy either way. But I will say, from my heart of hearts, as they say, I have a good feeling. I think this is going to be quality. And I think people who are professionals are going to see this like, wow, this is a really professional and funny production. That's just what I predict. I think that's going to happen.
I think so. I hope so. Because you're involved. The people involved are so incredibly talented and so diverse. Like, your articles will be some of the photos that were shot in the dentist office. I mean, I think it's something for everybody, to be honest.
I think so. The true test will be to show my mom, who has the attention span of a fly. So if she's interested, then you got her. Because she says everything. It's boring. That's boring. That's boring. If you don't hook her within like 3 seconds, you're out. So she's like my test to see if something's interesting. However, she reads a lot of really boring books. So
yeah, this isn't going to be boring. I forgot to mention Ron English. I couldn't believe that we were in contact, but I interviewed him, and it turns out he's a really, really well-known street artist. They call him the godfather of street art. He was in Banksy's film. But he has a studio in New York, does these worldwide exhibitions, has books. Anyway, he let me interview him, and in one of his paintings, which is about bowling, is going to be the cover for this book. And he grew up bowling and working at a bowling alley. So it's just like everything is clicking. Like you said, everything is clicking.
Yeah.
And it should be a really, really interesting, really interesting book.
So this book is more of a compilation. I wouldn't say an anthology, but it's a bunch of other people contributing. Whereas your past work, I don't think it's like that. So as a producer, what are some of like the difficulties and benefits of making this, dealing with people like me in New York on different time zones and, you know, different people who communicate different ways, and you gotta deal with different personalities? Is it better than writing your own book just by yourself, or is it annoying? Like, how has that been?
Well, I guess honestly, I think it's better, because I don't know. I'm a horrible self-promoter. I think when you have more people, you have so many, I think, more talented people than myself, and you're getting all their work. Mm-hmm. And the challenge is to blend it into one story, to blend all this different stuff so it flows well.
Yeah.
Most of my previous books, like the two Cleveland books, Amen, were with a bunch of artists. And it's like herding cats, dealing with artists. As you know, as we're both artists, we could be royal pains in the asses. So that's difficult, and keeping everything straight and dealing with people that are either just needy people, you know. I think that's the challenge. It's like herding cats. But I think the end. Yeah. I think it's worth it at the end, because you have such a diverse amount of work, and so that's always been my challenge. Yeah.
Now, what are some things about bowling that you learned? Did you learn anything about bowling while doing this?
I'm kind of a bowling nerd, so I kind of knew a lot already.
I knew that.
But I got at this auction these old women's bowling magazines from the 50s and 60s.
Oh.
And so I read them, and it was like going back in time. It was really neat. They had all the membership numbers from, like, say, Chicago, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, all over the United States. And I guess I didn't realize how big bowling was, because it said how many members. Like, Chicago had 2 million bowling people registered in bowling leagues back in the 50s. Wow. Like a lot. Like, it was huge.
My God, that's a lot of balls.
Yeah, it was. So I guess I didn't know the scope of how big bowling once was. I mean,
yeah, I had no idea. So I'm sure I'll learn something. But again, even though this is satire, I feel like there's going to end up being a lot of truth. Because sometimes, a lot of times when I make jokes, it's like, oh no, that's actually true. But I meant it as a joke. And it's like, actually, no, that's actually the truth. So, you know. And as far as, you know.
Oh, go ahead.
No, no, you go.
I did learn. So one of the things towards the end of the book, and of course me, because, you know, I do a lot of creepy dark art. Of course, there has to be a dark side to this book. There were one of the writers who maybe he was the one that does the horror films. He's writing a true story of actual murders that were committed by women using bowling related items.
Oh, wow.
And then another artist, Pat Moriarty from Seattle, who's done album covers. He's done all kinds of amazing art. He's doing the fake mugshots for these murderers. So
I did not know
there are actual murders committed. Like three of them, I think he found.
Three? can you give us a clue? Like,
I don't know any more than that. I haven't seen the draft.
I can see like a pin knocking someone out of the pin, or like throwing a ball. Because like one of my fantasies, which I fantasize about doing this to like two people. Sorry, I have a violent mind sometimes, but I haven't actually murdered anyone. But if I do the torture scene, or when I do the torture scene, it's going to involve either or both. It'll be two separate, or it'll be one or the other. The middle of the street or a grocery aisle that's like lit in fluorescent lights. You cover someone in food items. So it's like a bunch of junk food items, and you have a bunch of people throw junk food items at the person on the floor. This would be someone who really deserved it. Like I'm talking like they hurt like 100 people. You know, this is not like me just being a violent weirdo. I have some people in mind. And you throw the junk food items at them, right? And then one of them, I'd be stomping on their face as Santa Claus and saying, don't F with Christmas. But there's also going to be a bunch of wild animals or just cats and dogs released when they're covered in like maple syrup and junk food. So that would be fun. But you gave me an idea. I would take a giant bowling ball and throw it at them right before the wild cats and dogs come out and eat them alive, basically, because they'll be like dipped in hot sauce and, you know, all the stuff that cats like. Well, maybe syrup, chocolate syrup. I don't know if cats like hot sauce. That was dumb. I'm a little tired. Anyway, back to you.
I'm really proud I can contribute to your murder fantasy.
Oh, yeah. Now I'm going to add a bowling ball. It was straight up food and a little mafia antics, but I like the throw in the bowling ball. That's really fun. So anyway, now what is it that you love about satire?
I think, well, right now, with everything going on, I think we need to laugh as much as possible. But growing up, I think the more I think about it, Mad has had a huge influence on just not my art or not what I'd like to create, but me personally, just kind of joking around. And me and my buddy went to I did an oddities convention 2 weekends ago in Cincinnati, and the Cincinnati Art Museum had a exhibit just about Matt. So it was perfect because Matt and I grew up reading Matt. So he went, and I mean, it's great art, one, but just the talent and what they were saying, what they were conveying in the art. Like they were, you know, they were ahead of the time in terms of being political and fighting for certain things that are common now. But back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, they paved the way for a lot of stuff. Yeah.
Mad was in the 50s too?
I think that's when it started, yeah.
Wow, 55? Okay. I had no idea it was that far back. Wow. Yeah. I really know your stuff. Yeah. So let's switch gears now. Oh yeah, more Mad.
No, but I think that's a big influence on why I like to kind of create stuff with a bunch of different types of art, different styles, because that reminds me of Mad.
Yeah. I like satire because I just feel like there's so many ridiculous things almost every day.
Yeah.
I mean, just some of the last text messages I got regarding a shoot are just like, are you joking me? Are you joking me? So it's like, if you're going to act like clowns, then I'm going to treat you like a joke. And that's how I live my life. I can't. It only makes sense to treat this world like a joke. So,
right.
All right.
And it helps you not piss off. Like you think, oh, it makes you so mad. Like you see this, you see that. And instead of mad, you're just like, oh my God, you just, like, I don't know. Okay. Can I say two things that annoy me?
Please.
And it's gonna be like, oh my God. Even
Best
though
of this.
We've known each other enough that we already know we're kind of both quirky.
Yeah.
I don't know why this annoys me, but everybody freaking wears Under Armour. Everybody.
Not me, whenever really.
Whenever I see Under Armour, I'm like, it drives me nuts. I know that's
really.
Yeah, but it's just like everybody's decked out. Under Armour, everything. It's just like, oh my God.
What? Is that the thing in Ohio?
It's a thing in the world. Now you're going to notice it. Now you're going to notice it. Like, oh my God. Doesn't anybody. So that annoys me. And then.
Okay.
I don't think this is just an Ohio thing. I think it's everywhere.
Uh huh.
But the new trend, if you have a Jeep, you put all those stupid rubber ducks on it.
What? I don't see this either.
You're going to see that too.
Wait, what about the Stanley Cups? My dad's girlfriend asked me about Stanley Cups yesterday. The only reason I have this is because I left my big 7-Eleven thing that I had for years that was peeling and a mess. I lost it somewhere. So that's why I have a Stanley Cup. But that's a big trend. Every girl at Equinox has them. Every girl that comes into the dental office, my dad's girlfriend says, I don't understand because she's on social media. She's like, what's with this Stanley Cup? I'm like, it's just a cup. It holds a lot of liquid. I've been doing this my whole, forever.
I can't wait till the next time you're out driving and you're going to see a Jeep and you're going to be like, why do they have all these stupid ducks on it? Everybody does it. And why? I don't know. I guess it's the sheep mentality that annoys me. So
yeah,
we went way off track, but instead of getting mad about it, why should I get mad? It's so stupid. But that's what satire is. You just kind of, whatever floats your boat, man.
You know what's fun? Well, first of all, one of my mottos in life, is basically like a lot of people give you crappy offers. And some of the offers are great, so you do it. And then other things, it's like, nah, I don't really want to do that. But you can do a counter offer. And then a lot of people give me a material, so I can get mad and I can block someone or whatever. But I don't really care. So instead, I have material. So here's one from today. I had a director offer to send me a picture of his testicles, which I don't want to see. I figure, I have this whole Haley Weinstein producer from Hell series, which I'm going to do eventually, which is all based on true stories of someone being crazy on set, casting, it's all, I have enough true stories. I don't really need to make things up or things that we wanted to do. So I figured what I would do is I'd have Haley Weinstein, maybe one of the actors, and go, someone, he said he wanted to send me a picture of his testicles. This girl, crying about it, maybe how this director might think I'm have responded. I don't care. I don't really give a crap. My parents see the messages and they laugh. So, it's actually providing entertainment for the family. But whatever. But so I could have the actress be someone different than me. Go, oh, I'm so offended. Oh, what do I do? What do I do? And then Haley Weinstein would go, just send it to his daughter. Which I consider doing, because that would be really That would be really messed up, though, send it to their family. But in satire, back to satire, you take the material and have a crazy producer go, just send the pictures to his daughter. Just honeypot him, So, that's one reason I like satire, because I got so much material, man. But anyway.
I mean, you need it to get through the day. I can't imagine the douchebags you work with on a daily basis. I can't imagine.
Just trying to get everyone paid from one shoot is driving me insane. It's just like I'm getting hostility. Yeah. It's like, but there's a lot of great people too. And you learn from everybody.
Yeah.
And sometimes the great people are going to send you pictures. Yeah, you learn from everyone, the better and the worst, it's all a spectrum. But anyway, we are at the end of the interview. I'm sorry I ate up your interview giving That's crazy all right. stories for like 4 minutes. But I would love to have you back and talk about, the book after it comes out. Like down the line. So we're going to have more clips. And we did a very funny photo shoot showing the creator, Scott, the before and after of what happens when before he tried bowling and then after. And I love these photos and videos. I'm sitting on them. I have them backed up and I cannot wait to share them. But we won't share them until it's timed, for the crowdfunder. So we're at the end. Tell us where to find you, any websites, and we'll put the link to the crowdfunder in the under the video.
Yeah, I'll work on that. I'll get that done and then support the book. It's going to be great. I'm on Facebook, Scott Cranack, and Instagram, Cranack Scott, I think. my website, it's too long and I don't really update it.
Okay.
I post a lot on social media, so that's probably the best way to find me and contact me. But yeah, we're going to work on this crowdfunder and post videos, and we'll try to get that going soon.
It's going to be cool. It's going to be really cool. And the name of the book, one more time, just in case listeners forgot.
Pinfluence.
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 All right.
A fictional history of women's bowling. Or I'm thinking of Pinfluence, a fictional, or is it, in parentheses, history of women's bowling. I don't know. That's maybe too much, but I'd like to.
Or maybe the real truth about bowling. I like that.
Maybe. But yeah,
just
still
title it off like it's real. But anyway, it's not my book. All right, gotta go. Yeah. Okay. I got someone waiting. It's great to see your face. You remind me of my mom's brother. You actually look like my uncle. But yeah, you guys could be siblings. It's really crazy. Huh. Even
well,
glass.
It's a good thing.
He's very creative. Yeah, he's very creative. He was a big camera op in Hollywood for years and did a lot of creative stuff and really cool camera stuff. So, you know, he's a total artist. And so are you.
Cool.
So
yeah, anyways, I'm sure we'll be talking more about the book, your stuff, your contributions.
And I send you my drafts.
Yeah, and thank you for, you know, taking the time that one day we shot, and that was great. And
oh, yeah.
Thank you so much for having me on and supporting my art in this book. It's going to be awesome.
Of course. It was a very crazy day. Things have calmed down a little since then. Yeah. So hopefully when I see you next in person, it will be much more zen and not so rushed. That was insane.
Yeah. Stay warm. Yeah. Stay safe because we're about to get nailed.
Can't wait. I got to. Yeah. See you later. Bye.
Okay.
And now back to the studio with Mark Torres for more It Came From The...
Hey, this is Billy West from Show Business. You're listening to It Came From The Radio. Get out. Get out.
Now, back to our show.
You are listening to It Came From The Radio, and I just watched a very interesting movie. I actually watched the last 30 minutes in the shower while scrubbing my face and in the sauna, and I was quite entertained. And, let's just give you a little synopsis. This is not for me. This is from the people who made the movie. So here we go. The award-winning, wickedly good revenge thriller, Santa Zeta, a Mel de Santo production from acclaimed Spanish filmmaker Antonio Muñoz de Mesa, a prolific director in film and TV, in the breakout section. Now, influencer by day, this is the movie plot, vigilante by night, Zoe Nocane Ochoa is a world-class travel influencer, amassing millions of followers by exploring the globe through her vibrant channel, Santa Zeta. But when the vlogging ends, her true mission begins. She uses her public persona as a perfect cover to track and eliminate child predators. Fueled by the unsolved murder of her little sister, Zoe embarks on a relentless hunt across three continents, from the underground neon of Korea to the gritty sprawl of Los Angeles. As she closes in on a global network, the digital trail leads her back to her own hometown in Spain, where she must confront a nightmare far closer to home than she ever imagined. So hello, I really enjoyed this. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
So lots of questions. Okay, so as you know, you probably have not been sleeping under a rock. You've probably seen that the Epstein files and all this PDF file child trafficking stuff is all over the news, especially this week and the last few days. It's everywhere. And this film is about, you know, PDF files, or maybe it is. Maybe it's about insanity. So is this a total coincidence or...
Yeah, it's a total coincidence, but because it's a pandemic, it's happening all the time. So I talked to a psychiatrist that said this is so many cases around the world and other countries that could be like identified like a pandemic because it has like the same things. Many cases in all the countries, and it's not a virus per se, but it's something that happens all the time.
Okay, interesting. So now, related question, is this at all inspired anything or any parts of it, even the influencer parts, inspired by true events or parts of your own life that you experienced directly?
Yeah.
Conversations?
I had a child abuse in my family with a close relative. So I lived it like... like if reality breaks, because we loved him so much. he was so charismatic, and he was someone that we loved, everyone loved. So for me, it's like the world like breaks, and I want to relate to that fragmentation, because in the movie she's fragmented, she doesn't remember part of the trauma. And I was like always working with that word, fragmentation, because when it connects, it's painful, but at the same time, it's a relief. And the YouTube thing is that, like, I lived in San Diego for 3 years with my family with a visa for artist, and we opened a channel about a Spanish family living there. So I made like 3,000 videos, and it was a very famous channel from 2014 to 2017. So I fell in love with that language, with the YouTube language.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the film, and there's some nice architecture in there. There's a lot of nice visuals, and I love the lighting of amber lighting and the green and the, you know, the red and blue a lot of people use, but it's always nice to look at. So, okay, so now I'm going to move on to the star of this, who is called the God of War by one of the characters. So she's kind of a hero, I guess an anti-hero. She's flawed. She does bad things. She does good things. What characters did you have in mind for references, or what already existing gods of war were inspirations for this character?
Yeah, I didn't have any inspiration. I was, because I'm in love with anime and manga, I love these kind of characters that has like many angles, and that for me, I wanted to balance the revenge vigilante superhero like cartoonish thing with the ordinary daughter that lives in the north of Spain, and with the vulnerable child that has been abused. So I want to have a dialogue between those three layers, and anime and manga does it very well, because it's not linear. You stop the narration and you go back, and then you have the story of the villain, like we have in black and white sequences with a little girl, and that you met the villain before the so you had an idea of the villain, but then you have another idea because you heard the story. So for me, it was like, I don't know, I had Attack on Titan, Demon Slayer, even Frieren, different mangas and animes in my head.
Mm-hmm. And before, I think, any character did anything a little evil, or maybe afterwards, there was a kiss on the cheek that occurred. So in my life, you know, one thing I kind of live by is anyone who's overly thrown out, I love you, oh my God, I love you, you're so great, I love you, those are the people to watch out for. And also in my life, the people said, trust, you can trust me, are the main people not to trust me, and the only people that owe me money. So I always kind of watch out when people are like a little too sweet. So is there a reason why you had like sweet kisses on the cheeks associated with the characters right before or after they did something a little villainous or destructive?
Yeah, because I think affection and love is the main reason why the predators justify themselves. And the victims and survivors feel that affection. So they feel it. They feel loved. That's why it's so contradiction. It's like, I'm a kid and I feel loved, but at the same time, this shouldn't be happening. So for me, it's like a kind of perverse affection.
Right. Interesting. Now, I'm going to say, you know, in my life, and this is, I don't know if you ever saw Caddyshack, but the people in Caddyshack, they're all uptight and they're well-dressed and they don't do really bad things. But, you know, I just have a thing for uptight people. And I find that the people who are often like Bill Cosby, the Bill Cosby effect, they're well-dressed, they say the right things, they're polite, they don't curse, but yet they're the one who are either contributing nothing or doing something dangerous. Whereas maybe someone like my dad, who will wear, you know, hiking boots to dinner, he's actually really, you know, helping out, but he might say the wrong thing and, he might wear sweatpants or whatever. So in this film, you know, the whole time, a little spoiler alert, you think that the main character, the God of War, is kind of the good guy getting revenge or justice against all these really bad guys, because the bad guys are made to look really, really bad, you know, at least from the point of view of the viewer. So, but then at the end, we kind of find out her parents are
maybe the bad guys, and they seem all buttoned up and they say the right thing and they do the right thing and they're respected by the community, but she's stealing outwardly. So that's my long way of asking, who's the good guy? Who's the bad guy in this film?
Yeah, I didn't, because I wanted to play, to disguise this drama with genre, revenge genre, like speed on the, I will speed on your grave, and this mini Kill Bill parody, like I have a list and I have to kill people. Mm-hmm. It's like just a cliche to make the audience comfortable with the language, but for me, mm-hmm. it wasn't about bad guys, or it was a bad way to look at love. It's like, how do you look at love in a bad way? So that's why I have the little black and white stories, because they have all their justifications. Jo Kim in South Korea has their own justification. Thaddeus Ginger, that has this illness, and the nameless monster too. So for me, it's, you're not good or bad. You're looking at love in a very dangerous way, because I lived it myself, and I see that they think they love the people that they abuse.
Right. I think most people. I'm trying to. You know, I am thinking of one abuser, because I do have a bit of a justice story, and I do want to make a documentary about this person. And this person has broken at least 3 people's bones and driven a vehicle into at least 2 groups of people, and is a really bad person. But I don't know, I don't think there's love behind it. I think it's straight up sadism. So that exists too, I guess. You know, sometimes there's love and it's a mix. And then sometimes we just have people that really enjoy destroying other people, and I don't know if there's love there.
Yeah, that's crazy to me. Yeah, it's like, what's it? Because for me, it has to be some kind of something that holds that thing that you want to destroy some other. For me, this is very interesting, because in the north of Spain, it's a very closed community, the Basque country. So if you marry something, a black woman or from Venezuela in this case, or you're letting into the community some alien stuff. So if you have a daughter that is a mix, mm-hmm. you're like a colonist. You can colonize your own daughter, because it's from another. You wouldn't do it with a real Spanish, north of Spain, Basque girl. So we talked a lot about this thing that you have the right to be like a Christopher Columbus over your daughter. I know it sounds crazy, but it's a logic that sometimes happens when you're like the. You are in your land, and you have invited something in your land. It's all the time that you're a slave.
Interesting. Very interesting. My mom lived in Madrid for a little while, so I always enjoy the Spanish language, and it was very interesting to listen to. And honestly, I'd rather listen to that than English anytime. So what else inspired you to make this film? Like, making a film, first of all, the first question is, how long did it take? And then why go through all the suffering and the sacrifice, because there's always some bit of suffering and sacrifice, or at least losing sleep, you know.
Yeah.
You know, there's always some type of sacrifice.
Yeah, for me it was like the adventure of discovering the movie while filming, because we didn't have much pre-production, and the main character didn't travel outside of Spain. I told her, you're going to discover these places, Seoul in South Korea, Los Angeles, United States, everything, for the first time as a person, and I would like you to play that as a character. So, and we only were 7 people filming, so it was like a family, a run-and-gun style, discovering the movie, because I didn't write the script before. I was writing the scenes. I told them what was going to happen, but not how, and I was writing like 2 days in advance. Okay. So we were discovering the film. It was really fun. Yeah.
2 days in advance. I mean, what if you got sick those 2 days, or food poisoning, you know, which might have happened in the movie at some point? You know, I mean, because then you lose those 2 days and you're going to have to cancel the shoot. That would give me some major anxiety.
I didn't think
yesterday,
about
my whole day was shot. I was supposed to do all this stuff. I was shot. I did interviews those 2 times. So, yeah.
Oh.
Wow. Well, that's a pretty ambitious. Mm-hmm.
We were lucky. We were lucky. I didn't think about that. I thought it was going to be okay. We were 4 days shooting in Seoul, 5 days in Los Angeles, and 10 days in the Basque Country in the north of Spain. It was 18 days shooting in 3 different in September, October, and January.
Okay. Well, this might be too personal a question, so feel free to answer this however, but I work with all different types of filmmakers. We're shooting two features and two shorts in this house right, in the next 2 months. And a common topic is investment and money and who provides the money, how you get the money, how you get the location. So if you could give us any insights in how you got these awesome locations and the great actress or, what type of funding you needed, any details on that.
Yeah, we were lucky because we had some investors that are friends of my partner that wanted to support the production company and gave us $300,000. So
Wow.
I wrote a script that when I finished writing it, they loved it, but it was like 2 million, so we couldn't shoot it. So I
Wow.
said, I have a story in the back of my mind of a traveler YouTuber that he could add production value, like three different continents. And I know these places because I've been to Seoul and I know the places, and I lived in San Diego. So I think we can do this pretty quick. And I have a great actress. So they said yes. And we did it with just three cameras at the same time, because the vlogging camera and two cameras, they have a Steadicam, the autofocus, and everything in the same place as the Ronin 4D, the same cameras that they did Civil War or Adolescence, the Netflix TV show. They're great cameras for this kind of shooting.
Looks beautiful. I really like the visuals. I'm very sensitive. There's certain visuals, if it looks ugly, I just don't want to watch it. It was so pretty. I was like, oh, this kind of transports you. I mean, it's nothing like White Lotus, but White Lotus is so beautiful, and there's parts of this that are so beautiful. I'm like, oh, wow, I just want to watch it again. So pretty. All right, so totally different. Switching gears. The main actress, she has to get pretty violent, and she has to have some anger in her, I would say, and some aggression. So how did the director get this out of her? Did she just have it naturally? Were there any guidelines or methods to get her to that place?
Well, because I knew her so well, I taught her for 3 years in school in Madrid. I knew that she could do these three layers. And I don't, because I'm an actor myself, I have theater company and I've been touring with, and I'm a playwright. I know that we have just to work on the here and now, the presence, and Ikani is very, very focused. Also, she's in the spectrum of autism. She's really functional, but she has to be careful with the stimuli, the sounds, everything. So at the same time, that gives her like a very focused here and now thing that when I was watching her, even the way she thinks, it's like, wow, it's very powerful. It's very powerful. And she was very, she thanked us because we were taking care of this. She had to be with some headphones for the sounds and whatever, and she felt very good because we were with her all the time. Not saying, oh, this is an inconvenience. No, it's something that gives power to your character. And we were working the here and now. That's it.
Oh, wow. That's very cool. And it's nice to see, how you take care of each other. I worked on a film and I cast the lead actress. And I don't think we put her through hell, but we shot some scenes where she was scantily clad and she was in the cold. And this girl could just do anything. And a lot of actors would just crumble. So it's nice to see when people look out. As a makeup artist and exec producer, I was basically her slave running around and just hoping, so make Sabrina comfortable. That was my whole job. Please. It's always what I try to do if you're working with anyone. All right. So we're at the very end of the interview. So anything that you just want us to know about the film? Anything on your mind?
Well, something very magical happened because we were shooting in this space where the Basque people, men, gather to cook, and women cannot go into just once a year and whatever. And the main actress said, "I dreamt as my character last night. Mm-hmm. And I dreamt I had a scene with my father, and in that scene I was questioning, because I don't know in the script something that I questioned my father. So I said, "What? You dreamt that as a character?" So I wrote
right,
it.
Right.
I wrote it there, and I asked the actor, "Can you go to back to Madrid in the next train so we can shoot the dream that the actress had?" So it was a beautiful scene. It's a scene when he is in a very green situation, smoking, and with a laptop. And she's asking, "Something happened to me. Can you tell me what happened?" And he keeps saying, "Just take your pill, take your pill." So that comes from a dream. So I like it. I like when we can do that.
Yeah, it was great. So, okay, I said we're at the end, but one final question. Do you think that you get real life messages through dreams, and then also give us your socials and where to find you in the film?
What? Can you say the question again? So,
do you think you get like premonitions or messages or from God or spirit or the future or dimensions or just truth through dreams? Do you think that actually happens to people?
I think for me, since I was a kid, I know that this is real. So if you disagree, I say, okay, I know, because I feel
it.
For me, what is happening is everything is happening at the same time, the future, the present, and the past. Mm-hmm. And because it's happening at the same time, if you are alert, you can just go and take a little from the future, a little from the past, and you can make your own decisions, discover or sculpt the reality. Because it's happening, and I know it's true. So for me, filming is like, I know that this movie is gonna be okay, because it's already shot, and I know it went well. So I feel that way.
It was so awesome. I'm so glad that I made the time for this. And where can people find you? Websites, socials, any premieres, screenings?
Yeah, in santazeta.com, we have a link tree with all the socials, and we're going to be also in the San Diego Latino Film Festival now in March. So from Slanders, we go to San Diego.
Well, that's the end of the interview, and thank you for listening to It Came From the Radio. And now we're going to go back to the studio for more with Mark Torres.
Thank you.
Rudy Pata, you had any honor? You would listen to sci-fi.radio, the sci-fi for your Wi-Fi. Kapla!
Now, back to our show.
So that about does it for this week on It Came From the Radio. Join us right here any week on this radio station. If you miss any part of this show,
tough,
go to our newly revised website, www.itcamefromradio.com. The archives will be up in a week or so. Check us out on such places as btd.radio, sci-fi.radio. Check us out on our places such as Facebook, Instagram, YouTube page, Twitter.
And always follow the cost-benefit ratio. If the benefits outweigh the costs, do it. If the costs outweigh the benefits, don't do it. Or
just Google It Came From the Radio.
And we'll see you next week.
You have been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views of the show's hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect that of the management, owners, or staff of this station. We now return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.